In March of 1996, in the midst of the media storm surrounding the publication of David Foster Wallace's breakthrough novel, Infinite Jest, David Lipsky was assigned by Rolling Stone magazine to write a profile of the author. He spent 5 days on the book tour with the young writer, taping their conversations, and transcripts of those conversations have now been published in a new book called Although, of Course, You End Up Becoming Yourself, A Road Trip with David Foster Wallace. It's published by Broadway Books, and I'm very pleased that it has brought David Lipsky back to our show. Hi.
Hi, it's great to be back, Leonard.
How did you happen to get assigned to travel with David on this book tour? Did you know him personally?
You know, I didn't, actually, but I was we kept pushing at Rolling Stone, Jan Wenner, the man who owns our magazine, to do something about him for a few years before because he was clearly going to become the best writer of our group, you know, of people who were born, let's say, right around, you know, 1960, et cetera. And so actually,
you're a novelist and you were willing to concede it to him?
Well, look, when you read, I think part of being a good writer is being a good reader. And when you read someone that good, there's no question, right? So finally, one morning, Jan saw a picture of David Wallace in the New York Times, and he saw he had long hair and a bandana, and he said, ah, he's one of us. Send Lipsky now. So that's how I ended up spending 5 days with David Wallace.
He seemed somewhat reluctant to do a lot of press interviews when he was on that tour. In fact, the day before you went out to begin traveling with him, he was here, and I had a chance to talk to him, and I want to play a little clip from that.
That'd be great.
You know, the perfectionism is very dangerous because, of course, if your fidelity to perfectionism is too high, you never do anything. Because doing anything results, it's actually kind of tragic because it means you sacrifice how gorgeous and perfect it is in your head for what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of years, I think, where I really struggled with that. You know, the book is imperfect, but I also know that the book is exactly the best I could have done for the 3 years that I was working on it.
So he was under a lot of pressure from his publisher and from himself, obviously.
Yeah, it was great. But there was something very wonderful. He told me that he had never, you know, as good as he was and as good as he clearly was to all the people who were following his career before Infinite Jest, what he said he loved so much about that book was that he'd always, before that, worked, he thought at about three-quarter speed. What he compared it to when he was talking to me was when you write the paper the night before and you figure, well, if it's not great, I could have gotten an A if I'd started 2 weeks ago. And he said, for this thing, this book, Infinite Jest, was the best I could do for 3 years, and I'm going to give it. It'll be an experiment. I'll write as well as I possibly can. Even if I can't get it published, I'll just know I tried as hard as I can. And he said he'd built up some machinery in his guts now, and that for that reason, he knew he was a writer after that.
Although, as I said, he seemed to be reluctant to go on the tour. A lot of writers don't like doing that because they have to talk about themselves. And they also aren't sure that they should be talking to certain radio stations or certain publications. What about Rolling Stone? Did he feel okay with that one?
I think he did. What he keeps saying was that he figures that because it's Rolling Stone, he can be jaunty. And so I think it put him in a sort of a loose, fun mood. And then he wrote for the magazine a couple times after our time together.
The body of the book consists of transcripts of conversations that you and David had while traveling on the book tour. Were you taping pretty much everything that he said during the 5 days that you traveled together?
Pretty much. And then if I had the tape turned off and he made a funny remark, I would turn it back on very quickly and then repeat what he had said into the tape. And then he would smile and say, having someone come here and repeat things I say into a tape machine is a real ego boost. I should pay someone to do it.
So, but you did it all the time, or did you have specific interview time?
Oh, no. We were driving, so we were just talking. That's one reason why I think it's such a great way to let readers kind of have a sense of what David is like, is we just were driving. You know, we drive from Minneapolis, essentially from Illinois to Minneapolis with a plane flight in the middle, and it's just whatever we talked about for those 5 days. It's great.
Well, he'd allowed you to stay at his house as well, so was a sense of trust struck from the start?
No, I mean, I was just so thrilled to be there. So I think that I'm kind of starstruck at the beginning of the book. And in the beginning of the book, we're having a disagreement about whether fiction that's very narrative is realistic. He felt that it's not. He felt that what the experience of life really is about 500,000 bits of different information coming at you a day, and you have to somehow pick in that incredible flux 25 that matter. And so I kind of disagreed with what he was saying, and he looked at me and said, I'm not sure whether you're a very nice man or not. And it was only after the second or the third day that I think we both really started to enjoy. I mean, I was enjoying it because here's the best writer my age, you know, one of the best writers in America ever, and I'm getting to ask him any question, which is such a dream. But I think that I think he had fewer reasons to enjoy being around me, and I think he maybe began enjoying it once we had traveled. It's sort of like it's like a road trip equation. 40 miles plus in a car together, you're going to like the person you're with.
Are you having the same debate that people had during Zola's time, whether you include everything in a realistic novel or whether you leave certain things out and craft the book? Although in the case of Infinite Jest, how big a book is it? It's got to be 2,000 pages or so.
Yeah, it's about, well, it was originally longer. It's about, it runs at about 1,090, but he cut 500 words out. He said the first 400 were obviously, you know, had to leave, and the last 100 were difficult.
It's sometimes hard to travel with another person, even somebody you know well. So was this a difficult trip?
Oh, no, it was incredibly fun. He was, you know, as a reporter, I've hung around a lot of interesting people, and I hope that I've picked cool friends. But he is the most interesting person I've ever traveled with. He just was incredibly – I mean, Leonard, you've read his work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just – he's an incredibly alive set of eyes. He's an incredibly agile mind. And so to be able to be with him while he's experiencing the world was an incredible treat.
Well, few people – John Updike had this ability as well – have that special ability to write descriptions that just bring a thing alive. And he had that.
Yeah, and he had it to an incredible degree. I think maybe one of the few Americans since the turn of the second half of the last century to have it more than Updike. Updike said a good enough writer can make anything interesting. And so, and with David, just being around him, like I remember we were at Mall of America, and there was some terrible chain restaurant, Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania, and he turned to me and said, "Yes, because when I think pasta, I think Hulk Hogan."
Well, you seem to be eating in a lot of bad places, Denny's and the like. Don't you eat at decent places on a book tour?
Well, this was all the pre-foodie era, so this was like pre-foodie. But no, you can. I mean, David loved to work at Denny's. I mean, in his second book, in the place where you have acknowledgments, he thanked the owners of Denny's family restaurants. I think he just felt very comfortable there.
You wind up stuck at the Bloomington Normal Airport when it gets snowed in, and then you have to drive to Chicago over icy roads. Do you think all of those problems might have been a blessing in disguise?
Well, it was a great way for readers. I mean, he just when he was coming up as a writer, I knew a lot of people at Harper's where he was first publishing those essays. I mean, he wrote that incredible essay about being on a cruise ship and one that I think is even slightly better about being at the Illinois State Fair. And what people were saying at Harper's was that he just was the most fun person to hang around with and the most fun person to talk to. And so in terms of giving both me having the chance to be around him and readers having a chance to see what this great set of eyes and this great brain was like, yeah, it was fun because you got to see him responding to any number of different conditions.
Well, you had to, I'm sure, do a lot of editing as well. Certain things you were sorry you had to cut out?
Oh, no, the book is pretty much unedited. I tried to cut a lot of my questions down because I didn't think that the reader necessarily wanted to know a great deal about my opinions about books and things like that. But no, with David, as I began reading the transcripts, I thought, God, there's almost no better way to have a reader know what this writer was like, because he's telling his own – I mean, for the whole second half of the book, he's just telling how he grew up, how he became a writer, how he wrote his books. And so I thought, my God, no.
Also, his relationship with the publishing world, movies, tennis, a lot more. Tennis is a major theme in the novel. How important was it for him as a topic of conversation?
He got very excited talking about sports. He said that the real thing that he wanted to be, he said he was, you know, reading was this weird sideline, and what he really wanted to be from when he was young was a real serious jock. He'd played competitive football in Illinois for about 5 years, and then when the other kids were suddenly bigger and they were hitting harder, he discovered tennis just playing on local courts, and for about 5 years was incredibly obsessed with that.
Until he realized that he was never going to make it, really, as a top tennis player.
What he said was that just like the other, he talks about it in the book, he had hit puberty a little bit later. And so he was playing against people who had the bodies of a man, and he still had the body of a boy. So he felt like his body had slightly let him down in competitive tennis.
My guest is David Lipsky. His book, although, of course, you end up becoming yourself, A Road Trip with David Foster Wallace. And the title comes from something he said about his parents. Why did you decide that that was the line to use?
Well, it's such a great thing. He just said that I asked if because he is someone who'd always thought he'd be an athlete, and both his parents are professors. And so I said, look, were they kind of steering you towards being a writer? Were they steering you towards books? He said, no, it was just, you know, they could have steered me anyway, because, you know, although, of course, you end up becoming yourself. You know, he was saying that you have, you're going to get there more or less anyway. I thought that was a lovely thing. And, of course, the book, when he decided to tell me as well as he could, kind of how he'd become the person at Infinite Jest, it seemed like a title that would do both things.
You have an afterword in which you describe his long struggle with depression and the events that led up to his suicide, but you put it in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, I am.
Because everybody's going to ask, that's the first thing that comes to mind. How did this writer, with just so much potential, already so much success, how did he come to kill himself?
I'd like to answer both those things. I want to put in the beginning because I was very afraid. I only knew him for those 5 days. But as a writer, I probably a week hasn't gone by since 1990 when I haven't read something by him, an essay, a short story, a novel. And I when he died in September of 2008, I was very nervous that people would begin only seeing his work as leading in that direction. And so when I was putting this book together, I thought it's important to say how he died, but I would love to leave, I wanted to leave the reader with the image that I had had of this incredibly powerful, charming, and funny writer, this brilliant man who was loving being alive. And that's the, that's kind of the second thing about the part of how he died. I had never been around somebody who seemed to have a more healthy idea of how to live. If you had asked me in August of 2008 who was the most psychologically healthy American writer, without any hesitation, I would have said David Foster Wallace.
But during the interview, he does talk about his depression, although he says he doesn't have a biochemical depression. He was on antidepressants at the time, so was he being disingenuous? And adding to that, he seems to also be trying to downplay his drug use, even though the novel is in large part about addiction.
It is, although what he, the reason, we talk a great deal about that. He said that he felt that something about the way American life worked now kind of made us, our relationship with everything, whether it's really high-quality food or with exercise or with drugs or with television, is an addictive relationship. And so he thought the best way to write about America at this time was to portray it as an addictive society, which I thought was very smart.
Did you keep up with him after?
Never spoke to him again.
Did the profile ever run in Rolling Stone?
No, I got sent. I mean, this is how correct David was. I got sent right about a week after I got home. I got sent to Seattle to write about heroin had become very popular again. So I was sent to live with heroin addicts for about a month. And then when I came back, his novel.
This is the Kurt Cobain time.
Exactly. And so when I came back, his novel had been out sort of too long. And so we couldn't do the story. And I was tremendously embarrassed. So he, as you said, had very mixed feelings about celebrity. He said that it made him wrestle with burly self-consciousness figures. So I called his agent and said, hey, this sort of mixed news, sort of good news, sort of bad news, we're not going to do the profile. And the last contact I had with him was, I guess I'd been so reluctant to leave Illinois where David lived that I kind of had wanted to keep a foot in his world. I got this big package in the mail and I opened it up very excitedly. It had his return address on it. It was my shoe. I left one of my shoes behind. And he said, yours, I presume, David Wallace.
One of the sad addendums to this is that the profile did run right after David Foster Wallace killed himself. So I guess you got to be in the news to get that kind of press. Do you see this book as appealing to people who have already read his work, or do you think that it might bring him some new fans?
I see it as being kind of about how it is, how one becomes a writer now. And since there's been no better writer in the last 50 years, there's in a way no better writing story. He talks about all the doubts. He said that he said this great thing, as brilliant as he was, and this, I always thought about this after we'd spent our time together. He said, I'm not the smartest writer going, but I work incredibly hard. You know, if I'm talking with you right now, I'll get self-conscious, I'll get confused, but if you give me 24 hours alone, I can be really, really smart. And I thought that was such a great thing to know about someone who writes as beautifully and intelligently as he does.
One thing you had in common, and a lot of young writers are now doing, is you go back and forth between journalism and writing fiction. You've written a novel, a collection of stories, also a nonfiction book called Absolutely American. Do you see some kind of a dialectical relationship between the two, or do you think that people are doing the journalism to pay the bills.
David had this great line about the difference between between nonfiction and fiction. He said that fiction should be about what's true as opposed to being a relief from what's true. And he said that with nonfiction, you're being honest with a motive, which I thought was great. So I'll stand by the way he describes the difference.
David Lipsky's book, Although, of Course, You End Up Becoming Yourself, A Road Trip with David Foster Wallace, is published by Broadway Books. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It was a pleasure being here, Larry. Thanks for having me.